It's Friday, and it's time for Let's Eat with me, Chef Nick. Join us from 3 to 4 for an hour of food, drink, and a little information. Call in and have a chance to win a gift card. Call 769-9577. Thanks for tuning in to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Good afternoon, Northwest Indiana. Yeah. Thanks for joining us for another hour of Let's Eat. And we also have Tom Lounges for the Midwest Beat. Tom Maloney, which is the Vice President of Operation of our radio station here. And our special guest this week, we have Clint from Misbehaving Meads of Valparaiso. Good afternoon, everyone. How's everyone doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah. Clint, welcome to the studio.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad I made it one piece.
Me too, considering how cold it is outside in the roads. Well, they still have ice.
I like the challenges of the cold. I want to put a shout-out to Sharon Jackson, which is usually the person running the boards for us, and she's out a little feeling underneath the weather there, and she texts me, and she should be here next week when we do our other show. We're going to probably have designer desserts in here next Friday. Okay. So she's going to be all ready for to get her tooth all nice and sweetened. And I also want to say congratulations to Tom Maloney. He's going to be a father.
Yay.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. So I'm going to need a lot of this mead to get me through the next couple of months.
Oh, yes, you will.
So a lot of times that actually gets people in that predicament to begin
with. Yes, it does. It does.
So please call in and join the conversation for a chance to win a gift card from Chef Nick's Eatery. Or Clint is going to be giving away growlers for anyone that calls in with a good question. About his product. Now, I'm probably stuttering because I have been sampling a little bit of his wine, and it is very tasty, and it does have a good amount of alcohol in it, so I got to kind of watch it here. But I did bring chicken pot pies and beef sandwiches, macaroni and cheese, and some baklava to try to settle it all down. So,
and pictures are on the Facebook page, so get online at Facebook for Lakeshore Public Radio, and take a look at all the things that we're eating and you're not.
So let me introduce you to Clint Wadsworth from Misbehaving Meads. He's here to join us. And Clint, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I've been making alcohol for some time. It actually started back with my Mr. Beer kit back in 1999.
I've heard that story before.
The plastic drum.
But yeah, how old were you when you got that kit?
I was 29.
Oh, actually. Okay. You were of age. Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny. We did, when I was younger, we made some wine under my friend's bed, and we did it in a plastic bag, so...
Did it under your bed?
My mother used to only store cookies underneath the bed. Now we got wine.
You can actually ferment pretty much, as long as it has sugar and you have yeast, you have a container, you can pretty much do it. So my buddy used to make wine under his bed.
That's pretty wild. That's probably one of
high school days.
One of the safest things I think you could ever find under a bed.
We didn't go blind.
No, that's good.
For any reason.
Clearly.
So I was going to ask you, what drove you to create this business?
Well, like I said, you know, I'd actually been brewing for some time. You know, it was kind of on and off. It was your typical sort of hobby level. Mm-hmm. And then my father-in-law said he was going to start keeping bees. And at that point I said, you know, you're going to have a lot of honey. Mm-hmm. You're going to need to do something with that honey. I should make some mead. So that idea started maybe about 6-7 years ago.
Now, the first time I had mead was when I went to the Renaissance Fair. Very popular with the Viking crowd.
Absolutely. And that's a lot of people, their first exposure to it is at a Renaissance fair. Or perhaps, you know, there's people go to Ireland and they'll stay at a castle and they'll have the mead there. And they'll always come in and say, hey, I had mead. And I'll say, at an Irish castle, I'm like, yes.
Okay, what is mead?
Mead is a wine that's made with honey instead of grapes.
So everything you produce has honey in it?
No. We're a winery, so we also do wine and we do cider too. But our specialty is absolutely in mead.
So how did that become a specialty? So you start off with a Mr. Beer kit. I got one of those for Christmas years ago as well. I was also of age, Nick. Thank you for asking.
I was checking IDs. That's all.
Making sure. I went from Mr. Beer kit to beer, and I've done some small batch aging of whiskey an oak barrel that my sister got me.
Those little hobby barrels?
Yeah, a little hobby barrel. So nothing too intense, too big.
Right.
But you're going from beer to mead? Have you always drank mead? Was there something about mead your father-in-law said, I'm going to have bees, and the first thought was, I need to make mead?
Well, I kind of gone through a different process with that. I made beer for a while, and we did some wine as well.
Well, this was all hobby.
Just for fun. And about 2007, I started really getting involved in just tasting and drinking all the different beers I could get my hands on.
Yeah.
I would definitely describe myself as a beer geek.
Okay.
So, and that's a whole phenomenon that you can go through.
It really is. You get your name on plaques and walls and maybe police department walls as well. You never know.
Never happened. You know, knock on wood. But, you start getting where you're really exploring the world of beer and the different flavors. And mm-hmm. then one of the kind of the driving movement for mead is really coming out of the craft beer movement.
Interesting. Okay.
So it's kind of like a transition. Like, well, what else are we going to taste? And then you start going to mead. Mm-hmm. So I was really drinking mead just as part of the whole part of being just a beer geek.
Okay.
Now, how is the process different from basically making an average wine versus a mead? Now, the textures are different. The flavor, obviously, different.
Right.
It's a thicker, I don't want to say syrupy, but it's a thicker kind of
It's not as
drink.
Clear.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. I mean, it can kind of run the whole gamut, really.
Okay.
I would say in terms of process, if you compare it, you can compare it to wine, you can compare it to beer. In a way, it's kind of the pinnacle, the point at which beer and wine will join.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I make mine more like wine, but there are people who will treat it almost like beer when they're in their making of it.
Because I've had it where it's been, and again, you can tell it's got honey in it because it's a little bit thicker to the taste.
Legs.
Yeah, and okay. It's similar to ice wine?
It can be.
Okay, because I've had ice wine recently, and that reminded me of mead.
And I think what you're striking at is in terms of dryness versus sweetness.
Exactly.
It can actually be quite dry, just like a typical wine. And I have one here that's maybe a little bit on the drier side, the mesquite blossom.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably put it more off dry to semi dry, but we certainly have done some things that are pretty dry. But in a way, mead will skew a little sweeter. You're correct in that regard.
Okay. And that's due to the honey?
Yes.
Okay.
And also, a lot of the honey character is going to come from having a little bit more sweetness. So the more sweet it is, the more you get that honey character.
Now, when I came in and visited you, you gave me a little bit of history of mead, what you think, how it all happened, which I thought was interesting, between how that happened and wine was developed and beer and all
sure.
that kind of stuff. Can you give us a little bit of that?
Sure, and it kind of ties into how yeast works, okay? So yeast is basically a microorganism that it's just like us. It's hungry, and what it eats is sugar. And so what it does is it eats the sugar, and then it releases some byproducts, basically mm-hmm. carbon dioxide and alcohol. So yeast doesn't really discriminate what its sugar, where it's getting it from. One of the first ideas is that yeast would come into contact with honey after it had been diluted with water, and it's susceptible to the fermentation process. So, the idea was that cavemen or Neolithic men would come across these hives that had been dropped and maybe in a pool of water or something, or water gotten into the hive and then it fermented. So
interesting.
Probably, yeah.
So when they drank it, they got
drunk.
Right.
that's where the term gathered around the watering hole came from.
There you go.
Perhaps.
Really quick, guys, we've got Caleb from Valparaiso.
Caleb.
Who's got a question for Clinton, misbehaving meads. Caleb, are you there?
Hi. How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us.
So howdy. I just wanted to say that you guys have probably put up the coolest store that Valpo has seen in a long time.
Thank you.
And I was wondering, about how long does it take a batch, like, say, a gallon of your mead to ferment totally? Because my buddy tried, and it came out a mess.
Okay. did you do it underneath the bed?
Well, I'm not sure. I think he actually did it in a very dark basement.
That's
close
even worse.
Close enough.
Dirty deeds. Typically, our process will be what they call primary fermentation, where it's the really aggressive, active part of the fermentation. That will typically be 2 to 3 weeks. And then after that, we'll transfer it, or what they call racking.
Mm-hmm.
We'll actually transfer it to a secondary vessel, and it will slowly start settling and clearing out.
I guess, Caleb, really quick, before I let you jump back in. So in the racking process, are you running that through a filter to clear it out? Are you doing a a double rack, or are you just letting it ferment first and then just...
Good question. Typically, we just we transfer it at that point without any sort of inline filtering. The filtering process we'll normally do, if we have to do it, that'll be before bottling.
Yeah, the bottling, right before the bottling process. Okay. Mm-hmm. Caleb, what is it about Misbehaving Mead's store that I think is so interesting? I've yet to be there. Can you describe it for us?
Well, I have yet to be in it. I met the guys at Popcorn Fest, I want to say either last year or, I think it was probably last year. But it's just the sign. It's a clever name, with the B in it. I think that's great. But
thank you.
Valpo has really put up a lot of fairly just bland storefronts, and they really do a good job of, putting it out there like, hey, we're Misbehaving Mead. We make mead. Come check it out.
Yep.
And, there's a lot of places in Valpo that you don't really know what they have in there until you walk in there. But I just think it's great that, I aspire to be a brewer myself. And so I just think it's great what you guys are doing.
I appreciate that. But I would argue that we are in that category of where people aren't sure what we do. And that's one of the reasons why we get out here, so to explain exactly what mead is. But I appreciate it. We do have a great storefront.
It's yellow?
Yes.
Just like bees.
And you're on the square, is that right?
Right across from the courthouse.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because when I go around and I search for places, and I went around, and it was a snowy day, it was a Sunday, and I went around, I looked to the left, and there you were, and I'm like, Misbehaving Meads, what is that?
All right, Caleb, thanks so much
for joining us here on
Let's Eat with Chef Nick.
Please do.
And you will have to stop in because Clint's going to go ahead and hook you up with a growler. You'll have to pick it up in store, but Chef Nick is going to be sending out a gift card as well to Chef Nick's Eatery. So go ahead, join the conversation at 219-769-9577. That's 219-769-9577. We'll go ahead and hook you up with a Chef Nick's Eatery gift card from Winfield. And if you've yet to eat at Chef Nick's or you wonder what he's got, take a look at our Facebook page, Lakeshore Public Radio on Facebook, and you'll see the full spread that we've got online there. And if you go back to the other photos from the last couple of Let's Eats, the whole spread. And, of course, Clint from Misbehaving Meads is going to go ahead and hook you up with a growler as well that you can pick up in the store.
You'll have your name, your address, your phone number, and you'll have to tell them all that when you walk in, and they'll hook you up with that growler.
Yep.
You know what I found interesting when I was talking to you is how you explained to me why you felt like the mead was before the beer.
Yeah.
And explain that a little bit. That was a cool – and I thought about that a few times, and it does make sense.
The mead before the beer, is this like the chicken and the egg?
Kind of. In the cart.
Okay.
It's actually the concept of why do we have civilization? And civilization is required for beer manufacture.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And they argue that perhaps the reason for civilization was organizing activity to actually create beer. Because you have to have specialists who are actually growing the grain. You have to have specialists who are kilning the grain. And then you have to have brewers, record keeping. Mm. All these sort of things come out of beer manufacture. Which is pretty interesting.
It is.
Yeah.
You've got six different flavors here. I'm seeing alcohol percent 13%. That's pretty high. For wines, it's usually single digit. Why is yours higher?
Well, wine is typically going to be 11 to 14%. So I think we're in that range. But yeah, you're right. There's some that are going to be a little bit lighter. I'll turn this one here, and this one is at 8.3%. So that's a little bit lighter there.
Okay. So what is that one?
That one is called March to Buzz. It's one of our most popular meads.
I'm going to march over there and probably get a buzz.
Sounds good.
So, I've been drinking Noble Savage.
I'm going to have a little drink
of
that.
Another one.
Is that the one you said it was got a little carbonation in it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a little sample.
Here,
of that.
I can set you up.
You know, folks, it's too bad that you're out there and not in here with us right now, because we got pot pies, beef sandwiches, mac and cheese, and we got plenty of great wine from Clint from Misbehaving Mead. And I'm going to have a sample here. All right.
And that's done with Citra hops. It's carbonated. It's a little, I always say it's a little sweet, and a little hoppy.
I like this.
Hops and different things go into the different alcohols, and the different types of grain makes a big difference in the taste.
Sure.
What is it about the honey? Are there different types of honey that you use for different things?
Perfect question. Yeah, there are different types of honeys. And what it really is, it's hard to train the bees to go to the different flowers. That's a joke. But depending on the flowers that the bees visit, what they're really doing is gathering nectar.
Right.
But the nectar has pollen in it. And pollen is actually what gives the different flavors and characteristics for honeys. So if you have a bunch of bees, they're going to say like buckwheat plant that's in bloom. You're going to get a very dark, robust honey like
look at
this
that.
One.
Yeah, that's
terrible. Oh, so you've got a straw in your hand?
No,
yes.
No,
or a honey stick.
It's a honey
it's a
straw.
Honey stick. Okay, yeah. Okay, and so. That looks dark. It looks like you just stuck it in a 2 liter of Coca-Cola
absolutely.
Or something.
And,
yeah.
And when I was speaking with Clint, my background with honey is my parents used to go to Greece and pick up honey in a can. You open it up, and it was as thick as molasses, but the bees fed off of the thyme.
Yeah.
And the honey tasted different. It was thicker. Mm-hmm. It was dark like that. So, yeah, everything they feed off is changes the flavor
so
of that
honey. So
you've
got a whole colorful rainbow in front of you there.
We do. And you can see honey that ranges from really almost a straw to a chocolatey sort of brown. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really depending on the type of what honey you use, it will affect the way the mead turns out. This is the dark one here, and this is the mead that results from it.
So you've got the buckwheat
blossom.
Yeah. Buckwheat blossom.
Like
and
it's like an iced tea color.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then whereas the mesquite blossom, which people think that's going to be smoky, but it isn't.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's what I just had.
Yeah, and there's nothing smoky. It actually results from the, once again,
it's
the honey.
It's very light.
Very light. And this is what that would look like, and then this is the appearance of that particular.
So that looks like a really light green tea almost.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
right.
Very, very light.
So there you go.
And we've got Albert the Chimney Sweep, Lakeshore
Public Radio. You know what? I think Albert's been to my house a long time ago. He don't know me, but I'm just saying I did have him come and do a chimney sweep a couple years ago.
All right, so he's been in your chimney before.
Yes, he has.
He's and for the kids out there listening right now, Albert is actually the guy that needs to go make sure it's safe for jolly old St. Nick to come down the fireplace at Christmas time.
Right, and not get so dirty.
That's right. Albert, how you doing?
Real good, real good. Just playing Santa's front man, but, you know, since he's done, I'm just doing regular service now.
So what questions? You have a question for someone?
Yeah, actually I do on that feed. I'm not like the big, heavy, dark beer fan, so I'm looking for, not a light beer, but a lighter fare. Is that something that you got there? Or,
if you come in, we do... Yeah, good question. If you come in, we do what are called flights. If you've been to a brewery,
sure,
you get to do a bunch of samples, and you can come in and try it. I mean, it's really hard to say. A lot of times we'll have people describe what they like, especially the wine or the beer, and we can typically, pair someone up with at least something they're going to enjoy.
What I had was nice and light. With that last, the
March to Buzz?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm getting that
right now.
So what are the flavors flavors like there? Is it like a fruity thing, or is it like more like a sharper, bite to it?
I think I know what you mean. We're looking for sort of taste descriptors. With the traditional mead, it depends on the honey you're using, and that can go from spicy to floral to citrusy. You can get some that are malty. So it kind of depends on the honey we're using.
Okay.
And then
so you have a bunch of different kinds that you've used from different plants or whatever?
It's basically different honeys that are resulting from bees pollinating different flowers.
Exactly.
But also, to take it a little step further, then we will use fruit. For example, I brought a sample of something called Black Lake. It's done with elderberries and black raspberries, and I think that was orange blossom honey with that.
So it's pretty dark, it's pretty heavy, and I think it's one of those.
Yeah,
we've got a whole range
we've
got, six bottles on the counter here, and there's a whole range of really dark purpley ones to the really light ones as well. But Albert, thanks so much for joining the conversation. And
sure.
Chef Nick is going to go ahead and shoot you out a gift card to Chef Nick's Eatery in Winfield.
And a growler.
And you'll be able to pick up a growler from Misbehavin' Meads over in Valparaiso right on the downtown square. So thanks, Albert, for joining us.
Okay, thank you. Been informative. Look forward to doing the tape.
Okay.
All right.
Sounds great.
I'm trying the March for Buzz.
Perfect.
I like
two
that. Buzz, and it's got a grapefruity taste.
Yeah,
you were mentioning citrus, and this is really refreshing.
I'm about to try mine as well.
It's a lower alcohol, so we won't slur as much if we stick with this.
Good for radio.
But it's very refreshing. It's almost, I'd be getting myself in trouble if I referred to myself as a breakfast drinker, but I was known for that back in the day, and this would be a good breakfast wine.
Yeah, this actually
like a mimosa,
really kind of sweet.
Yeah, I like this.
Grapefruit flavor.
I like that one.
So I guess with the honey backing up and kind of you've got the three honey sticks in front of you as well. You started off with your father-in-law's bees. Are you still using your father-in-law's bees? Where's the honey coming from these days?
We've really outgrown that.
Okay.
We use about 3 pounds of honey per gallon.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That is a lot of honey.
I love honey, too.
So how many, I guess, 3 pounds per gallon of honey?
Per gallon.
Or per gallon of mead that you're making. How much are you making in a batch? Are you making 50 right. gallons, 100 gallons?
It ranges. We'll do 45-gallon batches up to 225-gallon
So that's
batches.
A lot of honey.
Yes.
Yes.
Wow.
And honey's not cheap.
No.
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 Especially some of the specialty honeys. I mean, this isn't what you're going, you know, down to the grocery store and picking up.
Yeah.
We've bought honey.
No great value.
We bought honey that was Tupelo Blossom honey that was, it was $10 a pound. That's the wholesale
wow.
account.
Wow.
That's for wholesale.
At $10 a pound.
So yes.
And this is not for the faint of heart.
180 pounds of that.
You want to do the math, we've got communications degrees. We've got a brewer in here. So do the math on your own there. So you've got a wide range. So are these honeys coming Canada, Mexico, Europe, Africa, kind of across the globe?
Another good question. Yeah, it depends on kind of what we're looking for. We did a Mexican coffee blossom, so it was coffee blossom that came from Mexico.
Okay.
So once again, bees pollinating coffee plants in bloom.
Wow.
I wonder how that honey tastes.
It's actually really good. It's kind of malty. It has a spicy sort of note, maybe a little figs. It was really a great, and there wasn't any bite to it either. It was and maybe a slight buttery note.
Do you do seasonal
yeah.
type of wines?
We sure do. It's more of a kind of a change in philosophy when you're going from season to season.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to be a little bit heavier, a little bit sweeter, more barrel aging and stuff like that when we look at the winter. And then we go to summer, we'll focus a little bit lighter, a little bit drier, and maybe some more carbonated offerings.
Wow. Now, there's a lot of talk about the honeybees, you know, suffering and dying off. And how does that affect the cost of your production? I mean, have you felt an impact because of the decline of honeybees?
No, and there's a whole lot of good angles we could discuss on that question. It just opens up a lot of doors. The bee populations that are suffering the most are indigenous populations for America.
Okay.
So these are the ones that are native to America, and they're, for various reasons, they're susceptible to some different diseases that a lot of the European bees have brought in.
Mm-hmm.
So the beekeepers
now, really quick well. You say the European bees bringing in this is
yeah.
is people bringing in these bees that have those diseases is
yeah,
that correct
and, okay, and, okay and those are they're hardier species and the native ones tend to be the ones that die out and it's kind of a similar situation as the native populations of America
right the Indians
yeah,
and the
Indians
diseases.
Yeah
exactly so bees are doing really well it's just which bees are doing well
and we need bees to have colorful flowers, or everything will be gray on this earth.
And about 70% of the foods we eat rely on bees in some way,
mm-hmm.
whether it's the plants or the vegetables or whatever.
And almost all
and
of, the
of
meat,
the animals
almost all of the meat
well.
Relies on bees as well.
Right.
That's
I would
right.
say it all does. But what's funny for us is we rely on a lot of commercial operations that use these bees.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, it's a tough situation. I mean, you're going to get a good source of the honey. It's going to be a reliable source, but it's still part of the agricultural, mass production of agricultural activity.
Yeah.
So there's a kind of a difficult conundrum with that because in using them and employing them, you know, at some level, you're helping push out the native species.
And it's not necessarily like where a local brewery can go ahead and use Indiana-grown hops or, you know, mm-hmm. specific types of ingredients that are local to wherever that brewery is. When you're talking about mass quantities of honey,
mm-hmm.
that's just not necessarily available anywhere, especially if you're looking for some of those specialized or outsourced
specialized
types.
Specialized flavors, yep.
You know, and you kind of have to. It seems like a really interesting, I guess, I don't want to call it an interesting dichotomy of, you know, you want this, but you have to sort of
settle
mm-hmm. maybe is the word, I don't want to call it settling for the sake of, you know, settling just kind of sounds
bad. It
doesn't
change the quality, but,
right.
you know, in terms of the overall effect on the environment, I mean, there's some questions to be had there.
So really the honey we get or you get is like farm-raised honey.
Really,
yeah. Yeah, like the fish and everything. It's all controlled.
Yep. And when you're doing that and these are going out into the wild, they're actually competing against the native species, you know, and they're coming into contact with them. So, you know, I don't want to overplay that, but We also use some local honey, too.
Yeah. I was going to ask. There's a lot of honey and beekeepers here in the area. I get to meet them at the fair a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And but you use an awful big amount, a large volume.
Well, we're in the process of buying out entire crops from beekeepers locally.
Have you thought of starting your own bee farms to make it your own in-house?
You know, that's always a temptation. However, you know, that's... I don't want to take anything away from beekeepers. It's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, when you're doing 500 hives, I mean, you keep busy. So we're going to let them do that, and we're pairing up with some of these local beekeepers who have big operations.
Okay. All right. Got a call?
We got another call. Caleb. This one, Caleb from Hobart is joining us. Caleb, welcome to Let's Eat.
Hello. How you doing?
Good.
Have you been listening to the conversation this afternoon, Caleb?
Truth be told, I have not, sir. I was scrolling down to Facebook, and someone had shared the post, and I figured I would call and try to be part of it and win the Kickstarter.
Well, Caleb, we've got Misbehaving Meads in the studio with Clint. Have you ever drank mead before?
I have not.
You have not.
Are you a wine or a beer guy?
I'm more of a beer guy.
More of a beer guy, okay. They've got a wonderful palate and selection, flights as well, as Clint had mentioned earlier. But Caleb, you know what? I'll go ahead and we'll shoot you over a Chef Nick's gift card from Winfield, right there on Randolph, and then you'll be able to go ahead and swing over to Misbehaving Meads and pick up a growler, maybe try a flight, and discover what you might like over there.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
We'd be enjoy happy the, to.
Oh, I would
the
most definitely. I would really enjoy that. I would really enjoy that.
And you'll see it. It's a nice, big, yellow building.
Can't miss it. And unless you're on the other side of the square.
Yeah.
Then go to the other side of the square.
The courthouse is going to be in the
and
way.
The variety, we've got a small sampling of six here, but the variety, how many do you have?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. How many varieties?
All right. Thank you, Caleb.
We have, I think, maybe 9 meads right now.
Okay.
2 ciders and 1 wine.
And how often do you rotate? You talked about seasonal, so we are in like the dead heart of winter right now. When does that rotation process start?
We tend to do it kind of incrementally.
Okay.
So we'll have like, this is an indication of maybe spring's coming. And then we'll have another one coming. And then before you know it, the entire list has been revolved. So we tend to move those around maybe 2 or 3 switches a month.
Okay.
Yeah, we do a lot of small batches, and we do a whole lot of different.
Well, these bottles are cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, if there's something that you like, then there's never a guarantee. Okay, maybe I tried the Buckwheat Blossom, and I want to get in there and try it again, but it's gone already, and it's off the menu. You've moved on to something else.
Yeah, normally they'll stick around for a couple months.
Okay.
And then we do have some stuff that's available in local stores and at local bars and stuff like that.
And that's what I was going to ask you. Where are you? Where else are you local?
Sure.
You know, you can get your products from.
Yeah, we have one that's called Big Black, which is made with black currants, black or black currants, depends on your pronunciation, black raspberries, blackberries.
Wow.
It's with raspberry blossom
honey.
Sounds
like mine.
Yeah, it's really good.
Can I have a little elderberry while we're talking berries?
This does kind of fall in that sort of vein.
Okay.
But that's available at some local liquor stores. You know, and you could, if you have a good liquor store that has a great craft beer selection, it may very well be in there.
So you distribute.
Yeah, through Cavalier Distribution.
So are you only distributing in Northwest Indiana, or is it Michigan, Illinois, Wisconsin, Ohio maybe?
Right now it's the northern half of the state, but it's kind of in the more populous pockets.
So like Fort Wayne, South Bend-ish?
Exactly.
Okay.
Elkhart, Lafayette.
Makes sense,
of course,
makes sense.
Northwest Indiana.
And, of course, right there in Valparaiso
right
as
in
well.
Valparaiso.
Yeah,
this is
lot,
very robust.
Yeah,
I like this.
Is that the
lot.
One that you can make Marcel and use it like a? Is it real dry? Is that the dry one?
No, this is the Black Lake.
Okay. I like the Black Lake.
Yeah,
that's
I like
my
them
favorite
all.
So far.
I really
far.
Did.
I really liked. I could really.
You know, and
enjoy
we were saying
it,
the studio was cold. Is it cold anymore?
Not
guys?
Anymore.
Not anymore. No. Not anymore.
Warming up quickly.
I like
the Buckwheat Blossom. I think has been my favorite so far. And we've got one more unopened one in front of you, Clint.
Oh yeah,
what do we got there.
This all
got a cider.
One. Oh okay, I haven't tried a cider.
Now, are these hard ciders?
Absolutely. Yeah, and this one's made with local. We worked with the local orchard. Got their apples.
Oh, that one's got a little bit of a foam to it.
Yeah.
So a local
orchard. It fell
orchard.
Over in the car.
Yeah, that happens.
I want to remind everyone to dial in 769-9577 for a chance to talk with Clint and maybe receive a gift card from Chef Nick's Eatery or a growler.
So if you've got a question for Clint, a question about meads or brewing or even a question for Chef Nick, or if you want to maybe know more about the wonderful radio industry that Tom Lounge and myself work in. We'll go ahead and answer any questions.
It gets more and more wonderful with every bottle we open.
That's right. dating advice, whatever you have, 769. I was about to give the pledge line out, 769-9577, 219-769-9577 to help join in the conversation with Let's Eat. And that's the one.
You know what you can do with this?
Oh boy,
you could.
Oh, this is
you
actually
can actually
caramel
you,
apple.
Yeah, okay. That's what I was going to say. You could use this in some kind of apple pie.
Oh wow!
Or like a or can you?
This would be a good reduction with pork chops.
Right, you can reduce it with pork chops. I like that.
Yeah,
Tom.
We
I
mislabeled
can reduce
this
it with my liver.
It'll reduce your liver.
It can reduce
yeah,
you
that's,
too.
That's right. This is actually really sweet. So
yeah,
it's
the good.
Caramel you've apple. Got a, you've got a local orchard that.
Orchard.
Oh boy, I'm gonna kick myself off the air.
I tell you what, though, it tastes
well.
Really like a caramel apple. Like yeah, I would eat a caramel apple, or like those Jolly Ranchers or something like that. It's like on the same line of that.
Yeah, it tastes really sweet.
What's the name
jacket's coming off now.
Yeah,
yeah, it's starting to get a little toasty in here.
You guys are putting the screws to me though. Actually, this one's mislabeled. This wasn't the one I thought it was. That's the kind of danger of using these little small bottles.
Is this called caramel apple?
It's called caramel
oh,
apple.
Oh, it's really good. Though.
Simple enough. I like
just
that.
Like Tom Lounge just said. I mean, you can make a reduction out of this with no problem. Like you said, put it over pork chops, maybe with a few raisins thrown inside.
There you go.
It'd be really good.
Do you cook with your meats then? Are you using them for reduction sauces at all?
I have, but not that often. With this one, we did. It's a cider. We added cinnamon, brown sugar, and cardamom.
It's really good, Clint. It's very good.
I appreciate it. It's been our biggest seller this last year.
I can see. I can see that.
Yep. Thank you.
You were talking about having it in local stores. What does the label look like? I mean, is it like the logo on your sweatshirt there?
Somewhat.
Okay. And is it easy to find on a shelf?
You know, the mead sections are really sadly small, so it's kind of hard to find.
You're probably one of the only ones in Northwest. You're probably the only one in Northwest Indiana. I mean,
there's a couple others.
Yeah, but I don't think
New Day Meadery out of Indianapolis.
Yeah,
they're great. They're a great operation. They're a lot bigger than us. They've been great, and you can find their stuff pretty easily.
Yeah, see, meads used to be almost like a homemade type thing. I mean, I didn't even realize that it was this commercial at this point. Because
really
when I first started drinking it, like I said, you'd find it at certain fests and fairs. And it was usually made locally by the people participating.
Sure.
And if you went to the Renaissance Fair, you could drink it there and try to find it later in a year. Good luck.
Hit the pillory and...
there you go.
Well, I tell you what, I didn't know nothing until I called and spoke with Nathan. Yeah. And he actually took some time out and explained it all to me. And that's when I said, well, this is really unique. And that's why I went and ventured you out.
Awesome.
And have you seen a rise at all in the popularity of meads with shows like Game of Thrones?
I assume that helps, I think.
Yeah. Though I guess on the show, for those of you out there who have not seen the show, they talk a lot about wine in the show, but the era of which the show is based around, mead was, a pretty popular drink.
Oh, dilly Dilly.
And Vikings is another TV show where they drank a lot of mead. No, what's the difference? Maybe you don't know, or maybe you do.
I'll make it up if
being
I don't.
Young, being young, in a lot of the Icelandic countries, they have something called grog that is a seasonal drink.
Yes.
Is that – I always felt it was similar to mead. Is there a difference?
I think it kind of falls in the same sort of understanding of those medieval sort of drinks, because that's spiced wine, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So, you know, something along those
lines. It's like wine and something else and something else.
Yeah.
And they you serve it hot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting.
It's like a mulled wine, I think.
Yeah.
We've got another caller from Hubbard. Donna is joining us on the line.
All right, Donna.
Donna.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I saw your post on Facebook, and I was kind of interested in this because it said that most of your flavors were more of a fruit type. And I just heard you talk about Jolly Ranchers and caramel.
That wasn't me.
Oh.
That was me kind of like, you know, drawing a comparison.
You know, and it's
Is it more of a fruit type of a drink than like a beer or a heaviness?
Yeah, I think so. And it has, because it has a lot more to do with wine than beer. With that said, we do have some that have some characteristics that are more fit for beer, what you'd find in that. So it kind of does straddle both categories, but I'd say a whole lot of fruitiness with what we do.
Oh, yeah.
I think more wine than beer.
Yeah, more wine than beer.
When you were talking about that, this sounded something more like in my realm of something that I'd be willing to, like, try to taste again.
Well, you know, Donna, go visit Clint And you know what they had? I was there, and there was a customer. You know, I'm really naive to all this, but he had this little nice wooden rack that had little spots, and you put little glasses in there, and people get different flavors, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is that called?
We call it the paddle.
The paddle.
Yeah.
That's
and
fine.
If you're not good.
Then you know what, Donna? And that's what you should do. You should go take an afternoon, go to Valpo, walk around the square, and visit Clint's operation. It's a really quaint place. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, it's a nice tasting room. I mean, we really are a factory.
Yeah.
But we have you wouldn't think it when you walk in.
Right.
Exactly. How big is your, not necessarily the storefront, but the whole building? Is it a big building? Because I assume on the storefront alone, you're probably about the size of everybody else on the
right.
square.
So where are you at on the square in Valpo?
We're on the east side of the square.
Right.
Okay.
And I'll give a quick plug to my
Anywhere
neighbors.
Anywhere by, like, extra
bile
or anything?
We're a little bit further down. We're by South Bend Chocolate Company.
Okay, I know where that's at.
There
yeah,
we go.
There are a lot.
So you've got chocolates on one side and mead on the other.
It's a Valentine's Day good for everyone, I think.
Yeah, there you go. And we're going to make it real easy for you to stop in and sample because we're going to send you a growler and you'll pick up the growler,
Donna, from...
You have
from,
to visit.
You got to visit Misbehaving Meads. You can pick up the growler. We will send you, though, the gift card to Chef Nick's Eatery. So thank
awesome.
You.
Awesome. That sounds great. This is something, like I said, I'm not like a big beer fan and, you know,
do you like wine?
A bit of the wine more, but, you know. This
if you like wine, you should definitely give it a try.
I might be able to enjoy a little bit more.
Donna, I don't like beer either, but I like wine, and this wine's very good.
Awesome. I'm not going to hold it against you, Nick.
Get the Black Lake if you like fruit. It is very fruity, very berry-ish, and then we've also got the apple caramel here as well.
Oh, the apple caramel's good.
I'm kind of bogarting this Black Lake here myself. Sorry, guys.
It's the right. apple one was made from locally, so I'm down here by the apple orchard, so I was wondering if any of their apples were in there.
We use the apples from a small family orchard, and I don't think they actually sell their apples to anyone else. We got their entire apple crop.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. Good deal.
Well, that's how we do it.
We're 21, so this will be a nice little thing for us both to go and enjoy.
Excellent.
Wonderful.
We'll be happy to have you come in.
Thank you, Donna.
Thanks, what are the hours for people to come in? I mean, obviously, you're probably manufacturing a lot more, mm-hmm. but what are the open hours for people to come and buy?
Well, we could try to keep it difficult, so we have weird hours. You know, I think it's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We're open from noon to 9:30.
Okay.
And then on Friday and Saturday, we're open from 11 to 11. Okay. And then on Sundays, we're open from 11 to 7.
What's your happening days?
Oh, go ahead.
Really, Friday evenings and Saturday evenings.
So if you get there by 9:30, you're generally pretty safe.
Yeah.
Get all the mead you want.
Yeah, I'd say come in if you really want an experience and get a good explanation. Come in, you know, in off hours.
Okay.
And we'll take our time with you, answer all the questions you got.
Very cool.
And when we get really busy, you know, sometimes it's hard.
Like any
turn
other
into a bar
or a restaurant, or a bar. We've got one more call
from
Gary from Hobart. And again, if you want to join the conversation, 219-769-9577. That's 219-769-9577. You can join us with Let's Eat with Chef Nick of Chef Nick's Eatery in Winfield. Myself, Tom Maloney, filling in for Sharon Jackson this hour during Let's Eat. And Tom Lounges, host of Midwest Beat. And coming up in 15 minutes, of course, is Ryan Priest filling in for Sharon on All Things Considered. And Clint from Misbehaving Meads. So now with the PSA out of the way, Gary from Hobart.
Hey, Gary.
Hi, how are you guys doing today? You know, just a couple of quick questions. You talk about all the different kinds of honey. Well, how do you know you're getting coffee? I mean, the bees, are they proprietary to whatever orchard their hive is in? Or because I live around, you know, I've been through the orchard, and they spray a lot in orchards, you know? And
sure.
I'm just curious as to, you know, how the spraying affects bees, and then how do you know you're getting all coffee honey or
sure.
clover honey?
A couple things there. First of all, typically they won't be spraying when the bees are out because they're really pollinating. But you're right. Sometimes there'll be residual pesticides, and that could cause some problems with the bees. But going with what variety, typically what you have is you'll have a farming operation that's growing one particular crop, and they'll hire the bee company to come out. They basically drive up they have all these hives on the flatbed of a truck. They'll drive right out there, clean frames, no honey in it, and the bees will go out into these fields, and they're just basically working like a huge area
of,
say, like they're growing raspberries there.
Okay.
And these raspberries are all in bloom.
You know, I visited your place several times.
Cool.
And, of course, after the first time I went there, I tried to make some mead.
Under the bed.
But it's not clearing up. I don't, you know, and it's been quite a while, and it's just not getting too clear, you know. Does it take a long time to clear, or is there another chem I should put in there to...
With home brewing, it can take a long time. I mean, we have a lot of different pieces of equipment and other things we can do. Sometimes we'll have to do a plate filter. Basically, you run the wine through a filtering system. Other times, you can use what they call fining agents. For example, gelatin, isinglass, Ketosin. There's all these other, you know,
additives. I'm familiar with the gelatin process in brewing beer at home.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
Normally, the clarity... I found depending doesn't tend to impact the taste too much. Mm-hmm. I think it's more of a sight and appreciation of. So we're looking at the bottles here, and they're clear bottles. It looks good. So maybe at home you're worried about that cloudy sort of look with the drink. But I found again it doesn't impact the taste that much. So if you're
I've made several different kinds of wines, and they're all pretty, except for the grape, you know, you can't see through it, but anything else has been kind of clear, so I was just curious.
You know? Well, if you're using a 5-gallon carboy, which, you know, is the big glass container typically used in home brewing, what I'd suggest is to take that and put it out in your garage. It's probably pretty cold out there, and that will help what they call flocculation, which is all the haze and yeast and matter. It will slowly start congealing and settling down. So I'd say...
Well, I've racked several times, at least twice since back in the summer. Well, before summer I did it, and it's still kind of...
get it cold.
But then, you know, I'll come out and discuss this with you.
Yes.
All right, there we go.
What sound is your car making?
No, I've got a hybrid, so it goes on and off.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, thank you, Gary, for joining us here during Let's Eat with Chef Nix. And Gary, we will be sending you a Chef Nix Eatery gift card, and you'll be able to pick up a free growler at Misbehavin' Meads in Valparaiso. We've got Ray on the line from
Ray.
Hey, Ray.
Ray, how are you?
That's what the Greeks say. Hey, Ray.
Hey, hello.
Hey, Diganis.
What's going on, Ray?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I had actually just a couple questions I wanted to ask. So I'm hearing you guys talk about mead and the comparisons with beer, and I want to know, is it carbonated or is it, you know, not carbonated like wine?
Sure. Sometimes we have it carbonated and other times we don't. It kind of depends on the effect we want. With the carbonate ones, those are typically a little bit lighter.
Try to make it like a sparkling?
Yeah.
Like try to create that like a sparkling wine?
Yeah. And then some of them are going to be more like a more traditionally wine-like or what we consider to be a traditional mead. And those typically, we try not to have those carbonated. So it kind of depends on what we want. And we do a lot of forced carbonation, just like a brewery would do.
Right. Okay. And then another question I want to know is that there at your place there in Buffalo, do you serve any food? Is there any, like, you know, appetizers or things one would have along with their mead while they're visiting?
I think the mead is a meal in itself, right?
It can be.
A liquid diet.
But with that, we actually don't serve food, but there's a lot of really great restaurants within walking distance
of
us.
Right around the corner.
And you can bring food in. We'll provide you silverware, napkins, plates. We got everything.
Cool. Yeah, BYOF?
Yes.
Excellent.
Bring your own food.
Okay. All right. Awesome.
Thank you so much, Ray. And again, we will be also mailing you a gift card to Chef Nix Eatery in Winfield, and you'll be able to pick up a free growler at Misbehavin' Meads in Valparaiso.
Okay. I have a question.
Yes.
And I notice that the acid level in here is low on your wines.
Mead can tend to be a little bit on the lower end. That's
right,
correct.
Because someone that has, say, acid reflux or something like that, and I'm just telling you because I have it, that if you drink wines sometimes, they just really, really affect you. And I'm drinking this, and I can tell that it's not going to affect me.
Some of the – I think it depends on what we're looking at. Some of them, we've had some that the acid level, the pH is like 3.1, which is, you know, pretty low. But a lot of times the mead will be 3.5, 3.6 – 3.75.
Is that a result of the honey?
Yes.
Okay.
And the water we use.
So what water, I guess, what water are you using?
We do reverse osmosis of the Valparaiso city water.
Okay. So. I was going to say, the city water, the Lake Michigan water that we get here in Northwest Indiana for home brewers is actually one of the best in the country as
well. Oh, yeah.
That you don't, we're some of the lucky ones that you don't need to use bottled water or any sort of other type of water because it's got a lot of the nutrients in it that you need. So you're just using city water.
Okay. For us, we're treating it. But the main thing we're trying to pull out of there is the chlorine because that can inhibit the yeast.
Yeah.
So that's what we're really trying to pull out of there.
We were talking about all the flavors. How much experimentation goes into it? With the microbrews, they have the brewmeisters that sit there and play all day, like mad chemists. Do you have that kind of equivalent in the mead world?
Yeah, it's me.
Would that be you?
Yeah, it is. There's a certain point where you kind of understand the process, and then you look at it almost as a journey. You know, you want to go to a place, and you try to figure out how to get there. Well, sometimes, you know, you may plan it out, but you'll have some unexpected turns. And the way you handle those unexpected turns is really what translates into whether or not it's successful or not.
Interesting. And so how does that, I guess, the process work? The home brewing world, sometimes a beer might take a couple of weeks, sometimes it might take a couple of months. So in that that Mad Hatter sort of concoction world, when you're trying things out, okay, you try things out, what is today? It's January 5th. So if you try something out on January 5th, is it January 10th? Is it January 25th by the time you know whether or not it works?
You know, normally if you taste the must, which is what we call the unfermented juice before you throw the yeast in, if you taste that and it's pretty good, usually you're off to a good start.
Okay.
You know, things can obviously happen during fermentation that can throw things off. But, you know, typically if it tastes good, then it's going to turn out well. You know, and then my idea is we do a couple tastings of a particular batch as we go through, especially when we're transferring it just to see where it is. And a lot of times we're testing it also to determine if we need to make some, you know, adjustments, specifically maybe with acid level or something like that. We use sulfites to stabilize, so we also are testing things at that point. And then there's a chance to make adjustments by adding, for example, some acid in, food-grade acid.
Oh.
Just to clarify.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
It's going to burn through your liver.
Before
quicker.
We go too far, because we're getting close to the end of the show.
Yeah, we are.
Went by fat. Why don't you give out your phone number, your address, if you have a website.
Sure.
And you already gave your hours of operation.
Yeah. We're at 65 Franklin Street in downtown Valparaiso. And our number is 219-242-8616. And we're at misbehavingmeads.com.
And are you on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram?
We're in all the things.
All the things, okay.
And you can call, 1-900-YOU-MEAD, and you'll answer all the questions, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Just describe what the sound your mead is making.
Wow.
How long have you been in operation? I didn't ask you that.
We're coming up on 2 years.
Oh, really?
About 2 year anniversary is coming up on April Fool's Day.
Oh, nice.
Misbehaving Meads, April Fool's, right?
How's the growth rate been in those 2 years? Are you hiring more employees? You get extending hours?
Yeah, we have. And I think we're growing faster than a typical rate for a business.
That's really good.
I was going to say, we got a lot of callers today. We got from specifically Hobart, a couple from Valpo, one from Lowell. Do you find people from all over, or is it mainly just people from Valpo who are visiting, who are maybe your regulars?
We have a lot of regulars from the region, but we do have a whole lot of people who will be doing brewery tours and stuff, and they heard about us somehow, and they'll come out of the way. They'll go to Three Floyds, and they'll come to us. It's one, two.
And what That's kind of market? Cool. I mean, you're out there at, like, farmers markets. Do you do things like that?
We do so many things, so many promotional things. A lot of beer festivals, wine festivals. We do farmers markets. We vend. So we've done like the South Shore Roller Derby Girls event, stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah, so we'll be like the featured vendor at something like that. But a lot of beer festivals, a lot of wine festivals and things like that.
And I guess on that question as well that Tom had asked just a moment ago about the growth rate, do you see people kind of getting attracted to meads in that sense? Maybe – like me, this is my first time having mead. I've never had mead before. Didn't really know what to expect getting into it. I like it a lot more than wine, I will say that. But do you get maybe there's a burgeoning mead scene, or is it just maybe something that people find interesting that they want to try?
Well, that's what we're hoping for, and that's what we're betting on. And, you know, everyone says mead's going to be the next best thing, big thing, and they've been saying that for a few years.
Yeah.
So I think we're seeing more of a slow growth, and it's kind of on the back side of the beer movement, like I said. But there is also that aspect of connecting into wineries, too. There's a lot of interesting developments in the wine industry, and I think that we're kind of tying into that, too. We're an urban winery, which is a, kind of a new movement, and obviously using different adjuncts, too. So it kind of comes from both directions. So in terms of mead, I hope it's going to keep on getting bigger. I hope it's not just curiosity seekers. But, you know, time will tell. We're doing well, though, right now.
Who came up with the name?
It was a car trip between my wife and I, and we've been we were toying with names, and she said that, and I'm like, that's it. And it was just like that.
Misbehaving meads.
Misbehaving meads. I was like, that's what we're calling it.
Double E.
Gluten-free?
Oh, yeah.
Gluten-free.
We are gluten-free.
In our restaurants, that's a big thing, gluten-free.
Yeah. That's a big thing, actually, for a lot of our customers. We have a lot of people with celiac who come in. And,
yeah.
So they like it, and you can get beer-like flavors from this. Maybe they like beer before. And,
Right.
So I have I don't have celiacs or anything like that, but when I have gluten, I sneeze a lot, and it's pretty brutal. I'll wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'll just have a sneezing fit.
Wow.
So I think I've maybe found a new escape in terms of, you know, it's tough to find gluten-free beer or beer that's brewed with less gluten, as they say in the labels. So gluten-free meats. I think I know the way to go now.
You have a shout-out to anyone in your establishment, the people that help you?
What?
You want to say thank you to anybody, like your wife?
Or? No, of course. You know, without Jill, I wouldn't be able to get anything done. And she pushes me, and we work together really well. And we have a great team. We have, you know, Nathan is there. Ben, I couldn't do anything without Ben. Laura's really great. And Jared is the new guy, but he's really doing well. So, and then we have a lot of volunteers to help us at all of our events, too. And
I'll be happy to volunteer to taste new flavors.
We call them guinea pigs.
There you go.
There we go.
So your card says, Misbehaving Meads is a craft winery located in downtown Valparaiso. We make and sell hard cider and mead, which is wine made with honey. Our lineup changes monthly.
Yep, it does.
Now, being in Valpo, that's a very artesian town. It's a college town, lots of music venues, lots of exotic foods, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like a perfect location to open your first business. Are you looking to expand to other towns anytime soon?
You know, that's something we had discussed, but there's some plans down the line about maybe something in another state.
Okay.
I'm not going to get into that.
Okay.
Probably the more important thing is for us to get a better production area right now.
You doing your own bottling, too?
Oh, we do everything.
Okay. You sell anything? Barrels of mead in the barrel?
We sell kegs.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like in a metal keg, like a beer keg?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, we can do that.
And what do you mean by better production line? Is it just a bigger space, more operations?
It'd be ultimately a bigger space. That's important.
Yeah.
But a more user-friendly space. I mean, we're really brewing mainly in a basement in downtown Valpo.
Okay.
I mean, it's a decent-sized space, but it has a lot of challenges.
Yeah, I got to go up and down the stairs.
Well, and you get a 55-gallon drum of honey, and how are you going to get it down those stairs?
Right.
Well, we have to pump it, so, you know.
Really? Yes. Pumping honey.
Pumping honey.
Sounds like a name for a band.
Yeah, it does. There we go.
Clint.
I think they were a cover band, right?
Clint, what's your favorite wine or your favorite mead?
Right now, I'm partial to Black Lake. I love Buckwheat Blossom. I do like the traditionals a lot. They're always very fun for me and interesting. But my favorite thing probably now is our cider that's on. It's a Northern Spy, and that's when I thought I brought, but I grabbed the ever-popular caramel apple.
And that's the one I liked.
Everyone loves it. It's really super popular.
So we've got just about another minute or so to go. Is there anything else in the world of mead maybe that we haven't touched on? I can't imagine that there is, but you never know.
Well,
we are not the experts.
There is one thing, and that I mentioned briefly about ice wine, which is the frozen grapes that are made in. It has a different taste and texture. Yeah. Do you use frozen grapes at all with mead?
Absolutely. It's like you are spying on me. We're doing a mead that's done with ice wine must and black cherries right now and honey.
When will that be ready to sample?
I think it's going to be probably about 4 or 5 weeks. We did an ice wine. It was massively popular. I'm like, I got to do this as a mead.
And again, so Tom, it's not a sample. You're a guinea pig.
Okay.
there's the difference.
That's fine. February, I'll be there.
Yeah, it was.
But for an ice wine, you'd be a lemming.
So. Oh, okay. There you go.
Just to clarify.
All right, we got just a couple of moments here.
Yeah, I just want to thank everyone for joining us out there in Radio Land. calling in. We had a lot of callers.
Thank you
very much.
Awesome.
I want to thank Papa Tom Maloney. I want to thank Tom Lounges of the Midwest Beat. He's always great to have on. Yeah. And our special guest this week from Misbehaving Meads, that's Clint Wadsworth, for giving us information I knew nothing about.
Thank you so much. It was awesome being here. I had a lot of fun.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.